Chapter 14. Drunk for joy, the carrier, entering, started back. And well he might, to find himself in such good company. Look, John! Said Caleb, exultingly, look here. My own boy from the golden South Americas. My own son. Him that you fitted out, and sent away yourself. Him that you were always such a friend to. The carrier advanced to seize him by the hand. But, recoiling, as some feature in his face awakened a remembrance of the deaf man in the cart, said, Edward, was it you? Now tell him all. Cried Dot. Tell him all, Edward, and don't spare me, for nothing shall make me spare myself in his eyes, ever again. I was the man, said Edward. And could you steal, disguised, into the house of your old friend? Rejoined the carrier. There was a Frank boy once, how many years is it, Caleb, since we heard that he was dead, and had it proved, we thought, who never would have done that? There was a generous friend of mine, once, more a father to me than a friend. Said Edward, who never would have judged me, or any other man, unheard. You were he. So I am certain you will hear me now. The carrier, with a troubled glance at Dot, who still kept far away from him, replied, Well, that's but fair. I will. You must know that when I left here, a boy, said Edward, I was in love, and my love was returned. She was a very young girl, who perhaps, you may tell me, didn't know her own mind. But I knew mine, and I had a passion for her. You had. Exclaimed the carrier. You. Indeed I had. Returned the other. And she returned it. I have ever since believed she did, and now I am sure she did. Heaven help me. Said the carrier. This is worse than all. Constant to her, said Edward, and returning, full of hope, after many hardships and perils, to redeem my part of our old contract, I heard, 20 miles away, that she was false to me, that she had forgotten me, and had bestowed herself upon another, and a richer man. I had no mind to reproach her. But I wished to see her, and to prove beyond dispute, that this was true. I hoped she might have been forced into it, against her own desire and recollection. It would be small comfort, but it would be some, I thought, and on I came. That I might have the truth, the real truth, observing freely for myself, and judging for myself, without obstruction on the one hand, or presenting my own influence, if I had any, before her, on the other, I dressed myself unlike myself you know how, and waited on the road you know where. You had no suspicion of me, neither had she, pointing to Dot, until I whispered in her ear at that fireside, and she so nearly betrayed me. But when she knew that Edward was alive, and had come back, sobbed Dot, now speaking for herself, as she had burned to do, all through this narrative, and when she knew his purpose, she advised him by all means, to keep his secret close, for his old friend John Peerybingle was much too open in his nature, and too clumsy in all artifice being a clumsy man in general, said Dot, half laughing and half crying, to keep it for him. And when she that's me, John, sobbed the little woman told him all, and how his sweetheart had believed him to be dead, and how she had at last been over persuaded by her mother into a marriage which the silly, dear old thing called advantageous. And when she that's me again, John told him they were not yet married, though close upon it, and that it would be nothing but a sacrifice, if it went on, for there was no love on her side. And when he went nearly mad with joy to hear it, then she that's me again said she would go between them, as she had often done before in old times, John, and would sound his sweetheart, and be sure, that what she me again, John said and thought was right. And it was right, John. And they were brought together, John. And they were married, John, an hour ago, and here's the bride. And Gruff and Tackleton may die a bachelor. And I may, happy little woman, may, God bless you. ... She was an irresistible little woman, if that be anything to the purpose, and never so completely irresistible as in her present transports. There never were congratulations so endearing and delicious, as those she lavished on herself, and on the bride. Amid the tumult of emotions in his breast, the honest carrier had stood, confounded. Flying now, towards her, Dot stretched out her hand to stop him, and retreated as before. No, John, no. Hear all. Don't love me any more, John, till you've heard every word I have to say. It was wrong to have a secret from you, John. I'm very sorry. I didn't think it any harm, till I came and sat down by you on the little stool last night. But when I knew by what was written in your face, that you had seen me walking in the gallery with Edward, and when I knew what you thought, I felt how giddy, and how wrong it was. But oh, dear John, how could you, think so? ... Little woman, how she sobbed again. John Peerybingle would have caught her in his arms. But no, she wouldn't let him. Don't love me yet, please, John. Not for a long time yet. When I was sad about this intended marriage, dear, it was because I remembered May and Edward such young lovers, and knew that her heart was far away from Tackleton. You believe that now, don't you, John? ... John was going to make another rush at this appeal, but she stopped him again. No, keep there, please, John. When I laugh at you, as I sometimes do, John, and call you clumsy, and a dear old goose, and names of that sort, it's because I love you, John, so well, and take such pleasure in your ways, and wouldn't see you altered in the least respect to have you made a king tomorrow. ... said Caleb with unusual vigor. My opinion. ... And when I speak of people being middle-aged, and steady, John, and pretend that we are a humdrum couple, going on in a jog-trot sort of way, it's only because I'm such a silly little thing, John, that I like, sometimes, to act a kind of play with baby, and all that, and make believe. ... She saw that he was coming, and stopped him again. But she was very nearly too late. No, don't love me for another minute or two, if you please, John. What I want most to tell you, I have kept to the last. My dear, good, generous John, when we were talking the other night about the cricket, I had it on my lips to say that at first I did not love you quite so dearly as I do now, that when I first came home here, I was half afraid I mightn't learn to love you every bit as well as I hoped, and prayed I might being so very young, John. But, dear John, every day and hour I loved you more and more. And if I could have loved you better than I do, the noble words I heard you say this morning would have made me. But I can't. All the affection that I had, it was a great deal, John, I gave you, as you well deserve, long, long ago, and I have no more left to give. Now, my dear husband, take me to your heart again. That's my home, John, and never, never think of sending me to any other. ... You never will derive so much delight from seeing a glorious little woman in the arms of a third party, as you would have felt if you had seen Dot run into the carrier's embrace. It was the most complete, unmitigated, soul-fraught little piece of earnestness that ever you beheld in all your days. You may be sure the carrier was in a state of perfect rapture, and you may be sure Dot was likewise, and you may be sure they all were, inclusive of Miss Slowboy, who wept copiously for joy, and wishing to include her young charge in the general interchange of congratulations, handed round the baby to everybody in succession, as if it were something to drink. But now, the sound of wheels was heard again outside the door, and somebody exclaimed that Gruff and Tackleton was coming back. Speedily that worthy gentleman appeared, looking warm and flustered. Why, what the devil's this, John Peerybingle? Apostrophe apostrophe said Tackleton. There's some mistake. I appointed Mrs. Tackleton to meet me at the church, and I'll swear I passed her on the road, on her way here. Oh, here she is. I beg your pardon, sir, I haven't the pleasure of knowing you, but if you can do me the favor to spare this young lady, she has rather a particular engagement this morning. Apostrophe, but I can't spare her, apostrophe returned Edward. I couldn't think of it. Apostrophe, what do you mean, you vagabond? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tackleton. I mean, that as I can make allowance for your being vexed, apostrophe returned the other, with a smile, I am as deaf to harsh discourse this morning, as I was to all discourse last night. Apostrophe, the look that Tackleton bestowed upon him, and the start he gave. I am sorry, sir, apostrophe said Edward, holding out May's left hand, and especially the third finger, that the young lady can't accompany you to church. But as she has been there once, this morning, perhaps you'll excuse her. Apostrophe, Tackleton looked hard at the third finger, and took a little piece of silver paper, apparently containing a ring, from his waistcoat pocket. Miss Slowboy, apostrophe said Tackleton. Will you have the kindness to throw that in the fire? Thank ye. Apostrophe, it was a previous engagement. Quite an old engagement, that prevented my wife from keeping her appointment with you, I assure you, apostrophe said Edward. Apostrophe Mr. Tackleton will do me the justice to acknowledge that I revealed it to him faithfully, and that I told him, many times, I never could forget it, apostrophe said May, blushing. Oh certainly. Apostrophe said Tackleton. Oh to be sure. Oh, it's all right. It's quite correct. Mrs. Edward Plummer, I infer? Apostrophe, that's the name, apostrophe returned the bridegroom. Ah, I shouldn't have known you, sir, apostrophe said Tackleton, scrutinizing his face narrowly, and making a low bow. I give you joy, sir. Apostrophe, thank ye. Apostrophe, Mrs. Peerybingle, apostrophe said Tackleton. Turning suddenly to where she stood with her husband, I am sorry. You haven't done me a very great kindness, but, upon my life I am sorry. You are better than I thought you. John Peerybingle, I am sorry. You understand me, that's enough. It's quite correct, ladies and gentlemen all, and perfectly satisfactory. Good morning. Apostrophe, with these words he carried it off, and carried himself off too. Merely stopping at the door, to take the flowers and favors from his horse's head, and to kick that animal once, in the ribs, as a means of informing him that there was a screw loose in his arrangements. Of course it became a serious duty now, to make such a day of it, as should mark these events for a high feast and festival in the Peerybingle calendar forevermore. Accordingly, Dot went to work to produce such an entertainment, as should reflect undying honor on the house, and on everyone concerned. And in a very short space of time, she was up to her dimpled elbows in flour, and whitening the carrier's coat, every time he came near her, by stopping him to give him a kiss. That good fellow washed the greens, and peeled the turnips, and broke the plates, and upset iron pots full of cold water on the fire, and made himself useful in all sorts of ways. While a couple of professional assistants, hastily called in from somewhere in the neighborhood, as on a point of life or death, ran against each other in all the doorways and round all the corners, and everybody tumbled over Tilly Slowboy and the baby, everywhere. Tilly never came out in such force before. Her ubiquity was the theme of general admiration. She was a stumbling block in the passage at 2:25, a man trap in the kitchen at 2:30 precisely, and a pitfall in the garret at 3:25. The baby's head was, as it were, a test and touchstone for every description of matter, animal, vegetable, and mineral. Nothing was in use that day that didn't come, at some time or other, into close acquaintance with it. Then, there was a great expedition set on foot to go and find out Mrs. Fielding, and to be dismally penitent to that excellent gentlewoman, and to bring her back, by force, if needful, to be happy and forgiving. And when the expedition first discovered her, she would listen to no terms at all, but said, an unspeakable number of times, that ever she should have lived to see the day, and couldn't be got to say anything else, except, now carry me to the grave. Which seemed absurd, on account of her not being dead, or anything at all like it. After a time, she lapsed into a state of dreadful calmness, and observed, that when that unfortunate train of circumstances had occurred in the indigo trade, she had foreseen that she would be exposed, during her whole life, to every species of insult and contumely, and that she was glad to find it was the case, and begged they wouldn't trouble themselves about her, for what was she, oh dear, a nobody, but would forget that such a being lived, and would take their course in life without her. From this bitterly sarcastic mood, she passed into an angry one, in which she gave vent to the remarkable expression, that the worm would turn if trodden on, and, after that, she yielded to a soft regret, and said, if they had only given her their confidence, what might she not have had it in her power to suggest? Taking advantage of this crisis in her feelings, the expedition embraced her, and she very soon had her gloves on, and was on her way to John Peerybingle's in a state of unimpeachable gentility, with a paper parcel at her side containing a cap of state, almost as tall, and quite as stiff, as a mitre. Then, there were Dot's father and mother to come, in another little chaise, and they were behind their time, and fears were entertained, and there was much looking out for them down the road. And Mrs. Fielding always would look in the wrong and morally impossible direction, and being apprised thereof, hoped she might take the liberty of looking where she pleased. At last they came. A chubby little couple, jogging along in a snug and comfortable little way that quite belonged to the Dot family, and Dot and her mother, side by side, were wonderful to see. They were so like each other. Then, Dot's mother had to renew her acquaintance with May's mother, and May's mother always stood on her gentility, and Dot's mother never stood on anything but her active little feet. And old Dot, so to call Dot's father, I forgot it wasn't his right name, but never mind, took liberties, and shook hands at first sight, and seemed to think a cap, but so much starch and muslin, and didn't defer himself at all to the indigo trade, but said there was no help for it now, and, in Mrs. Fielding's summing up, was a good-natured kind of man but coarse, my dear. I wouldn't have missed Dot, doing the honors in her wedding gown, my benison on her bright face, for any money. No. Nor the good carrier, so jovial and so ruddy, at the bottom of the table. Nor. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.